Well, good morning. And like Brandon alluded to, we are kicking off this brand new series called Hashtag Struggles. And for maybe some of you out there who only just hop around on Facebook, or maybe you don't even fully engage in social media, there's a question as we introduce this series that immediately comes to your mind. And that question is this: what in the world is a hashtag? Well, in its simplest form, I want to do my best to explain this to you and help you see sort of where we're going throughout this series. You see, a hashtag is something that is used in the social media world to connect you with people who are thinking the exact same things or saying the exact same things that you're saying. So, for example, if you were on Twitter — Twitter is a social media platform that only uses a maximum of 140 characters to communicate what you're thinking and what you're going through. And so if you were on Twitter and you were to finish your Twitter post with hashtag defend the land or hashtag all for one, what you would immediately see at that moment is you would be connected with everyone who's talking about the Cavs playoff game today, or how the Cavs are doing in the playoffs, or how the Cavs season has went, or pictures or posts about things about LeBron, and everybody who's saying something about the Cavs and which is with a similar hashtag would be connected to each other. Or maybe you know what Instagram is. Instagram is simply a social media platform in which you use pictures and pictures only to communicate with people. And so if you were to be on Instagram and you put a pic up there of your shoes and then you hashtagged it cool shoes, you would see all of the people and all of these pictures of all different sorts of shoes and who's talking about the incredible shoes that they have. And the reality is that these hashtags, whether they're on Facebook, whether they're on Twitter, whether they're on Instagram, they begin to connect us together to other people who are going through, feeling, and saying the exact same things in the exact same moments as we are. And as I look at the hashtag and this one, just a pound sign on your keyboard, that has the capability to connect us with people all over the world and connect us with people who are thinking the same things that we're thinking, what I automatically think is this: hasn't technology come an incredibly long way? I mean, just in the social media world alone, there have been just these incredible advances in the course of 10, 12, 14 years. I mean, I can remember back, and maybe some of you were a part of this. I can remember when I was graduating from high school, there was a social media platform that was becoming huge, and it was called MySpace. Anybody ever had a MySpace account out there or heard of MySpace? All right, some of you, yes, that dates us, so you were a little bit weary of raising your hands. But MySpace was incredible because this social media platform was like you got to sort of define and create Ben Carver's website almost on a social media platform. And so you got to pick your own background to your page. And every time someone clicked on your page and went to look at your pictures or whatever, you could put your own theme music on there. And so your song would play every time they went to your page. And it was just this incredible thing where you were hopping around, somewhat similar to Facebook, checking out everybody's page on MySpace. Or even before that, for me, and none of you teenagers are going to have any clue what this is, but for me, when I was in middle school, there was a thing that just exploded onto the scene. It was called AOL Instant Messenger. And never before had we heard of instant emails in which you could converge in a conversation with someone back and forth in an instant and have a conversation on what they were thinking and what you were thinking. But all of a sudden, this many years later, those things are gone. They're no longer. They're dated, and we have these incredible new things that connect us in new ways to each other. And technology has given us these incredible advances, and in some ways, they've made our lives easier. They've made communication easier. But on the flip side, what we also know about social media — and I think if we were to really look hard and be really, really honest, what we would all admit is this: social media and technology has some incredible advantages. But on the flip side, what we also know is that social media can have some unintended downsides, can it? You see, throughout this series, we're going to look at a few of those downsides. We're going to look at a few of those sort of accidental consequences that we experience in our lives due to our constant engagement on social media. And this series, like I sort of introed you to last week, is not at any point whatsoever is not going to be about bashing social media. In fact, here at Core, if you followed us for any amount of time, you know that we tap in and we value social media and what that does in our world. But this is simply going to help us navigate some of the struggles that we encounter in our lives that seem to be magnified through social media. And how do we do this life better in light of the struggles that we're having? And what I want you to know also, this is a side note. Some of you out there, you're saying, I don't have email. I don't have a social media account, period. I'm barely on any of those things. And so what does a series like this mean for me? You see, the struggles that we're going to be talking about and looking throughout this series are relevant to every single one of our lives, regardless of whether you're on social media or not. Long before social media was around, this is something that humanity was struggling with. But over time, it's become just a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more powerful in each and every one of our lives. And so this morning, we're going to start off with a struggle that I know each and every one of us have. It's a struggle that I fight every single day of my life. And that is my struggle with contentment. You see, at no time in history have people had so much and yet wanted so much more. I mean, isn't that true? I mean, look around in our world. Never has there been a time where maybe we individually, we as a family, we as a society have had so much, and yet we want so much more. And if you were to look really deep into that feeling that I just want more, 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 I need more to feel this contentment inside of you, I think what you'd be willing to admit is that sometimes a driving force to that is social media. Because every night you go home and you get on your Facebook page and you scroll through your feed. And you get this snapshot into everybody else's lives. But let me fill you in on something, and this is good, so you might want to jot this down. The reality of social media is this. You are looking at everyone else's highlight reels. And in the flip turn, on the flip side, what you see in yourself is not a highlight reel at all, is it? As you scroll through people's lives, you see their highlight reel, but all you see is your behind the scenes. And deep down, that leaves us wanting more. That leaves us feeling like we're left behind. That leaves us feeling like we're not as good as them. Because when we click on her page and we see the best picture she's ever taken as her profile picture, we think, well, that must be how she looks every single day. We hop on and we see these pictures of people's vacations. And they're in these luxurious resorts or they're at the beach. Or maybe they're back at Disney World again. You hop on social media and you look at these families with their kids who are always dressed in these really cute outfits. Or maybe you see those pictures, you know, those selfies of that guy or that girl who's always at the gym. They're always taking a selfie of themselves at the gym. And then all of a sudden you see all of these things and you look at your own life and what do you see? The profile picture that we get of ourselves is the one of us just as we've rolled out of bed and we're looking in the mirror and we've got like a going on with our hair and our breath stinks and we're like, I can't measure up to that. You take pictures of yourself with like the brown water of Lake Erie behind you while they're on the luxurious beaches. Your kids seem to be running around your house naked or in a diaper 80% of the time. They're never in a cute outfit like the rest of them. You feel like you're keeping little Debbie, your hostess, in business. You're never at the gym. Or maybe for you, you're living off of Hot Pockets and Lunchables, and they're taking all of these pictures at fancy restaurants. And time after time after time, as we scroll through the feed, what it leaves us feeling is our life doesn't compare to their life. What we have can never measure up to what they have. We feel like we're lost and we're left behind. And what we do is we see the best of their best, and all we see is the worst of our worst. Haven't we all been there before? I mean, right? Haven't you been there before? And it doesn't even have to be on social media. You find yourself looking out the side window of your house at what they're pulling into their driveway. You find yourself looking to the guy at the cubicle next to you and seeing the promotion that he's getting, the commendations that he's getting at his job, the raises that he's getting. You find yourself every single weekend busting your butt just to try to make ends meet, and then you get to hear stories of people who get to go on vacations or the fun hiking experiences that they're doing with their weekends. And you think, my life is nothing like that. My life doesn't go there. And you find yourself with all of these emotions going on inside of you, but at the top of the list is envy and discontentment and a feeling of, what did she type there? My life isn't what I hoped it would be. I wish I had what she had. I wish I had what he had. And social media just continues to perpetuate this in our lives. A few years ago, they did a study at two separate universities. And what they did was they asked all of these college students to spend 30 minutes on Facebook. And of all of these college students, they said, once you spend 30 minutes on Facebook, we are going to examine your brain and examine your emotions. And so we're going to go in and we're going to look at all the things you're feeling and all that you're experiencing after you get done. And of all of the students who did this study, after they had spent 30 minutes on Facebook, one-third of all of the students came back and tested as highly depressed. And when they asked them, of these one-third students, what's the emotion that you're feeling that's leading to these feelings of depression? Every single student answered that the emotion that they were feeling in that moment that was leading to that depression was envy. You see, when we start to compare, we start to lose contentment and we start to gain envy in our lives. When we compare ourselves to other people, we always lose contentment. We begin to push contentment out of our life and we begin to corral, to bring in envy into our lives. And I would say probably for a lot of us, what we would admit is those are two things that I wish they were going in the opposite directions. I wish I was pushing out envy and bringing in contentment. I wish I was feeling a little bit better about myself in the situation that I'm in. And so this morning, in light of that, in light of what you're feeling and what you're saying, that I want a little bit more contentment and a little bit less envy in my life, what I want to help us do this morning is I want to help us get there. I want to help us find a solution to that. I want to help us have more contentment in our life and push out envy in our life. Does that sound good? Everybody, you don't have to answer this out loud, but in your mind, I want you to say this: I need that. Because we all need that, don't we? We all need to feel a little bit more contentment with what we've got and a little bit less envy for what they have. But this morning, the difficult step is this. When it comes to any sort of change, when it comes to any sort of pushing out the envy and bringing in more contentment, pushing out what's bad and bringing in what's good in our life, if we're going to get rid of what's bad, it requires honesty. Some brutal honesty with ourselves. And so this morning, I'm going to ask you to get brutally honest with yourself. And I want to take us through an exercise, and don't freak out because I know some of your hearts are beating right now. You're like, what in the heck is this guy going to do to me? This is totally on your own, but I want you to do this. When you walked in, you received what we call our weekly here at CORE. And inside that weekly, there's a notes page. And so I want you to pull that notes page out. You see, I believe that for every single one of us, there are three main areas in our life where we experience the most amount of discontentment, where discontentment and envy begin to show its ugly head. And I want to walk us through those three areas. And here's what I'm asking you to do in this moment. As I walk us through those three areas, I want you to grab a pen in the seat back in front of you. And you'll notice in those three areas, there's a box beside each of those. And so if you've recently felt discontentment in that area, or you're presently feeling that, I want to ask you to be honest enough to put a check mark beside that. Not for anybody else to see, but just for us to be honest with ourselves and to recognize that in ourselves. For us to begin to expose any discontentment that we have in our lives. To put it out there in the open so that we can get rid of it. The first area that I think we struggle with the most when it comes to discontentment is material and financial. You see, don't we have a tendency to look at what they're riding in, what they're driving up in their garage in, and then we look at our hunk of junk that constantly needs fixed, and we find ourselves feeling like, well, I wish I had what they had. Mine just isn't good enough. Couldn't mine be just a little bit better? You see the picture on Facebook of her brownies, right, that she puts there on the counter, but you're not really looking at the brownies. All you see is the beautiful kitchen that she has in the background. And you're thinking, when am I going to get a cute kitchen like that? When is my house going to look like that? When is my kitchen going to look like I didn't just have a 2, a 4, and a 7-year-old throw up all over the place in my kitchen? And it's going to look clean and up to date like that one. You see their family at Disney World again. And you find yourself thinking, we can't even afford to leave the state. And you find yourself wanting something different. She's always wearing LuLaRoe, or have you seen the shoes? Yeah, women, you're impressed, right? I had to practice that like 4 times to get that right. You see the shoes that she's wearing, and what you're thinking about yourself is, I still shop at Payless. And you find yourself thinking about all of these things in life. If my material situation and my financial situation could be a little bit better, wouldn't my life be a whole lot better? And we find ourselves time after time after time guilty, experiencing discontentment in the stuff we've got and in the money we've got. The second area that we struggle with when it comes to discontentment is relational. You see those pictures out there on social media. And there are all these friends gathered together doing something fun on the weekend. And you find yourselves wishing you just had a group like that. Or maybe it is your group. And you're wondering, why didn't I get invited? Why didn't I get to be a part of that? Or maybe you find yourself single. And all along social media, all you see are wedding pics and bridal parties. You're at the age where you have to keep going to all your friends' weddings. And you find yourself wondering, am I ever going to find the perfect other half? Maybe you look at those pictures on Facebook, and it's that couple who's on vacation again, but they're all over each other. And they seem to really love each other. And you look at your marriage, and you feel like, oh, my marriage is in shambles right now. Our life doesn't measure up to that. Our relationship doesn't measure up to that. And we find ourselves relationally just wanting something better, wanting something more in our life. The third and final area that I think we struggle with the most, and this is the one that I struggle with personally more than the first two, but it's what I call circumstantial. We struggle with the circumstances that are in our life just don't seem fair, don't seem right compared to everybody else's circumstances. We find ourselves saying, but by this point in my life, I thought I'd be somewhere different. I thought I would be far enough along like they are, like that family has it. I look around and I see the 77th reveal party on Facebook. And everybody's finding out what gender their baby is. But my family, me and my wife, we can't even have a kid. You're working to try to make ends meet. You're working to try to get the promotion. Maybe you work in a job where it feels like it's 7 days a week and you still don't feel like you're making enough. But then everybody else has these 5 days a week jobs where they get to be off and they get to do fun stuff and they get to go to the football games on the weekend and they get to hang out with their family and they get to post all these pictures. But my circumstances are different. We're trying to dig ourselves out right now. And I don't have time for all of that stuff. And it's just not fair, the place that I'm living in. And in the midst of all of these struggles, whatever it was, whatever three, one, two, or three of them that you checked those boxes beside, in the midst of all of these struggles, what we sit there wondering is this: how do I respond differently? You're telling me that I can do something different. You're telling me that this discontentment in these three areas is bad, but I don't know how to overcome this. I don't know how to do anything different in my life. And one of the most incredible people that I have ever found in all of my life at responding to poor circumstances, poor relationships, and poor material and financial standing was a guy named Paul. Paul's a guy that we sort of introduced to you last week. He's a writer in the New Testament. And Paul is a guy who had a lot of times in his life where the circumstances were stacked against him. But in the midst of all of that, he continues to write about this thing called contentment. And for a little bit of backstory, today we're going to start in Philippians chapter 4, verses 12 and 13. You can follow along on your notes page or up on the screen, or you can even flip to it in your Bible if you want to. But here's what I want you to know as the backstory to this passage. At the very moment that this was written, this guy named Paul was in prison. And they believed that at this moment in the prison that he was in, that he was actually chained to a Roman guard 24 hours a day. He was chained to somebody else that wanted the worst for him. So he's not writing this like he's on a beach with one of those drinks with an umbrella in it and just enjoying paradise. That's not the circumstances that he has in his life. But in the midst of everything being stacked against him and things seeming not fair, and he's looking out, maybe not onto social media, but through the bars in his cell into the world and seeing that everybody else's life seems and looks better than his, here is what he has to say. Check this out. It says this: I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've been on both sides of it. I've had the luxury car and I've had the beater. I've been on the great vacations and I've been in the moments where we can't afford to get out of this city or get out of this state. I've been there for the reveal party and I've been there when we haven't been able to have kids. I've been on both sides of this. And he continues by saying this: I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation. No matter what side you find yourself on this morning, I found the secret. And you're saying, all right, Paul, share it with me. Fill me in. Expose the secret for me. Whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want, here is the secret. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. You want to know the secret? The secret of contentment that Paul sort of pulls back the sheets on and begins to expose in this moment is this. The secret to contentment is found in Christ and in Christ alone. You see, we've tried, haven't we? Like we search and we search and we search and we look in all of these different areas day after day and we're trying to plug this void. We're trying to feel more content. We're trying to get more stuff. We're trying to get more likes. We're trying to get more approval. We're trying to get people to accept us more. And no matter how much acceptance, no matter how much approval, no matter how many social media likes, no matter how much stuff we get, we still stand there feeling unsatisfied. And we're wondering why. Why do I still feel unsatisfied? I got the car and it didn't fill the void. It's because of this one thing. That as human beings, we were created with a longing for more. And here's what I mean by that. As human beings, God created us with a longing and a need for eternity. And nothing that we can accumulate, nothing that we can stockpile, nothing that we can get on this earth will ever satisfy that need. There is only one thing, there is only one person that can fill that hole in our life, and it's Christ. We need Him to be able to push out the envy and to be able to welcome in a little bit more contentment into our lives. When we have Christ in control of our lives, it starts to change the way that we look at and see and handle contentment. With His strength, we begin to do some things that actually help us take steps towards contentment. But without Him, we find ourselves sort of floundering out there, and we never seem to get ahead, and we never seem to get any closer to the satisfaction that we want and we need. We never get more contentment. We always come up short. But with Him, He says, if you just follow Me, if you just recognize that I am all you need, then I'll help you begin to take some steps. I'll give you some strength to do some things that are going to help you experience the secret of contentment, that are going to help you find contentment that I promise, that this guy named Paul found in the middle of a jail cell. You see, with Christ's strength, the steps that we need to begin to take start here and here only. We will kill comparison. We will kill the comparisons in our life. And here's what He has to say about it. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12. Again, Paul says this. We do not dare classify or compare ourselves with some who commend themselves, with some who think they have it all together. When they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are not wise. When we fall into this comparison trap, there is nothing good or healthy or wise that stems from that. In fact, there is no win in comparison. There is no win in comparison. You will never find a benefit to comparing yourself to others. And so you have to just say, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to stop doing it. And I will be tempted to do it. I will want to. I'll feel the need to. I'm going to want to scroll through those things on Facebook. But I'm not going to do it. I'm going to kill comparison in my life because it never leads to something healthy. It never leads to something good. That's just the reality of it. Comparison never works in our favor. And we know this because we have been crushed by comparison over and over and over and over again. How many of you out there have siblings? All right, a ton of us, a ton of us. And you know the weight of when you feel your parents looking at you and thinking, at least in that area, or maybe just life in general, he or she didn't live up to his brother or his sister or her brother, or her sister. Their life didn't turn out quite like that one. They're not as good as that sibling. You go back to Little League and tryouts, and you didn't make the team, or you didn't get the start, or you weren't quite as good as everyone. And you can see all the coaches writing on their notebooks over there, and over and over and over again, we face this comparison trap in our life, where it beats us down, where it crushes us. We went after that girl. I can only speak for the guys here. And we have her decide that she wants somebody else. Even though we really like her, even though we think we're better than that guy, she chooses him. because he's got the cooler moped or whatever it was. And the reality is we feel the weight of comparison in our lives. But regardless of that, why? Why do we keep going back, right? We keep going back to comparison over and over and over again. And the reality is, every single time we go to comparison, you always get one of two things, both of which are detrimental. Number one, you get envy because you're not as good. You don't have as much. Or number two, you get pride because you think you're better, because you think you have more. When we enter into this comparison game, we always come out on the losing end. We always get things in our life that don't make us any better, that don't make us any healthier. And we have to quit. And here's why. I think this just proves the point. Here's what James said. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom, right? This comparison that we think, well, it's wise to compare myself. That's how I get better. That's how I get ahead. And so it's wise for me here, you know, James, these guys that write the Bible, they're not above a little bit of mockery and sarcasm, all right? And so here we have it coming out. Such wisdom does not come from heaven, but it's earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. When we enter into this comparison game, he says it's not spiritual, it's not godly, it's not biblical, it's not healthy for you. And he finishes it there. When we enter into this game, you will only find disorder. It leads to this level of disorder in our life. See, I don't know what this looks like for you. But probably for all of us, if we're going to kill comparison, there are some practical steps that we have to take in our lives. And I know some of the things that I'm about to say may seem silly, but for some of us, they're going to be really, really necessary. Maybe for some of us, we just need to commit to, you know what, a couple times a year, I'm going to take a break from Facebook. Just for a couple days, just for a week, whatever that looks like, so that I can recognize, so that I can free myself from the constant comparison that I'm entering into on there. I'm just going to step back from that. Or maybe you need to say, you know what, it's to no fault of their own. It's completely on me, but that one person that I'm friends with or that I follow, and I constantly see all those posts and they're leading me towards envy, 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 I just need to stop following that. It's not that I don't like them. It's not that I don't love them. It's just that it's not healthy for me. Or I'm going to stop watching HGTV. Guys, don't nudge your wife on that one just because you just don't want HGTV on at your house. But I need to stop looking at that kitchen that I can't have. Maybe for some of us, it's I'm not going to the boat show. I'm not going to the car show. Because it just perpetuates me wanting something that I can't really have. And so I'm going to take a step back from this. You know, some of us may be asking the question, well, Ben, you're talking about envy and discontentment, and I'm not really sure how to recognize that in my life. For me, the easiest way for me to recognize that I have envy in my heart is when I can't celebrate other people's successes. And I've been there. I mean, I fight that. I lead a church that I would love to be better than everybody else's church. And that's not always healthy. And I find myself standing there and I can't be happy for that person. I can't be happy for that reveal party. And in those moments when I find myself feeling that, I know there's a problem in my heart. I know there's something going on. When I can't celebrate other people's successes, I know that there's envy harbored inside of me. And I believe this with all of my heart. And so catch this. that if I can't celebrate other people's successes, I'm limiting what God can do in my life. That's a big deal. It's a big deal for me. It's a big deal for you. That if we can't celebrate other people's successes, we're limiting what God can do in our lives. And let me just say this. Maybe you're not receiving the blessing that you want so badly in your life because you can't celebrate the blessings that God is giving someone else. There is so much discontentment and envy and hatred inside of you towards maybe just that one thing. That you're blocking the blessings that God wants for you because you can't celebrate the blessings that He's giving to other people. He wants that for you. He wants you to kill comparison in your life and be able to move forward. The second and last thing that He wants to help us take steps in is this, that we will cultivate gratitude. That we will cultivate gratitude in our lives. And I love this. One of the wisest men to ever walk the earth, his name was King Solomon. He had this to say about our outlook on gratitude and the things that we have in our life, our outlook on the world. Here's what he says. Check this out in Proverbs chapter 15, verse 15. He says, "For the despondent, every day brings trouble. For the pessimist, every day brings trouble. But for the happy heart, life is a continual feast." You see, here's what Solomon is saying. Here's why this is so powerful, and I love it. Solomon is saying this, for the despondent, for the people who are the pessimists, for the people who always look out and they say, nothing's right. My life is so bad. I'm always hurt here. This never goes right. For the despondent, if you look into the world and you want to find bad stuff, guess what? You can always find it. You can always find it. If you're looking for the worst in the world, you will always find it. But I also believe the flip side to be true. And if you want to find what's good, if you want to find God's hand on things in this world, if you want to look for that, if you want to look for God's blessing on your life, you can always find that too. It's all dependent upon our perspective. It's all dependent upon our choices that we make. It's all how we want to look at the world. It's all how we want to look at what we have. You see, oftentimes, and correct me if I'm wrong, don't we find ourselves oftentimes looking at what everybody else has instead of looking at what we have? We find ourselves looking at what we don't have instead of looking at what we do have, what we have been blessed with, what we have been given, no matter how small it is. What I talked about earlier, that hunk of junk that you're driving down the road in, guess what? That still places you in the richest 5% of the world. We are rich people. We're rich. We've got great stuff. God has blessed us in incredible ways. It's just how are we going to look at our lives? And Solomon, he continues with this. He says this too in Ecclesiastes chapter 6, verse 9. You want to know how to cultivate gratitude? Enjoy what you have rather than desiring what you don't have. You want to have gratitude inside of you? Stop looking at what everybody else has and just enjoy what you have been given. Just enjoy what you have in your life. You want to have a continual party in your life? Not fall on the despondent side, but what did he say in the one before that? The happy heart. The person with the happy heart enjoys a continual feast in their life. That doesn't mean that you're always going to have filet mignon, but it means that when you look at your Lunchable on the table, it's a whole lot better than having nothing. It's a whole lot better than having to eat rice and beans. Your hunk of junk is a whole lot better than having to walk 10 miles to work every day. Whatever that looks like. You see, when we look at what we have and what we've been blessed with, God promises a continual feast. Our struggles with contentment become more difficult in the selfie-centered world that we live in. But that doesn't mean that we have to give into that. It doesn't mean that we can't overcome that in our lives. It doesn't mean that we have to constantly live in envy and discontentment. We can stop comparing our behind the scenes to their highlight reels. But it only happens when we're willing to say, I'm not going there. I'm killing comparison in my life, and I'm going to stop comparing my prom dress to her prom dress, my car to their car, my life to their life. And I'm just going to look at what's great for me and what I've been given. We can stop being envious by being grateful for what we have instead of focusing on what we don't have. How do we do that? The secret of contentment. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation. And it lies here and here alone. I can do all this. I can experience all this through Him, Christ Jesus, who gives me strength. Will you pray with me? Father, this morning, there are so many areas of our life, whether it's material, financially, relationally, or circumstantially, that we look at our lives and the truth be told, just doesn't seem to measure up from what we see in everybody else's life. We struggle with every day wishing that we had something better, someone better, that our lives were just better. We battle envy and this discontentment over and over and over again. But God, this morning, we're asking for your help. We're asking your help to push out envy and to bring in contentment. But Father, the only way that we can do that is this. May we have the courage to say, I'm not going to comparisons anymore. I'm not comparing my life to everybody else's. And today, I'm going to choose to not go looking for everything that's wrong in my life, to not be the despondent, but today, I want to be the one that looks at what I have and recognizes that that's so much better. That I have all that I need, and that I don't need to want something else. And that we begin to look at your blessings on our life, and we feel gratitude towards that. It's in that area that we begin to overcome these feelings of discontentment, and we find that in you and in you alone. It's in your name I pray. Amen.